FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 12/19/17. Well, amazing how fast time goes. Trump has already been in office for almost a year. What's happened during that time? Well, one thing that's alarming to some, and certainly to our next guest, is the increase in the trade deficit. And talking about Jeff Ferry, Research Director of Coalition for Prosperous America. Jeff, welcome back to the show. Hey, and first, join us. Send us an email. Twitter us at Kerry Lutz. The email address, kl@kerrylutz.com. Jeff, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Kerry. It's good to be here.
Hey, so what's going on with the trade deficit here? It looks like we thought it was going to go down with Trump. That was what he ran on. And yet it's done nothing but go up.
Yeah, the trade deficit continues to go from bad to worse. The figures for October came in even worse than the previous month and worse than a year ago. And I like to track, as an economist, I like to track how it compares to a year ago, because that gives us a better reading on the long-term trends. And with the trade deficit 7% worse than a year ago, I'm expecting that this year we're going to finish up the year with a $560 billion deficit, which is significantly worse than a year ago, which is $500 billion. And the reason why all these numbers matter is that that $500 billion represents imports we're buying when we could instead be buying domestic production. And when you add it up over more than 40 years of consistent large U.S. trade deficits, that's a hell of a lot of jobs and manufacturing businesses. I think more than 50,000 factories have closed in the United States since the year 2000. It's the hollowing out of our manufacturing sector that you see when you look at that trade deficit number.
So how much longer can this really go on here before something's got to give?
Now, that's a good question. And if I knew the answer to that, I guess I'd be rich. What's going to stop this perennial trade deficit? You know, this is the long-term picture of the decline of the great American economic empire, if you like. In the 20th century, we were the top economic power. We made goods that the rest of the world needed and wanted and bought from us, and that fueled economic growth. And I'm talking about particularly the years from 1870 to 1970. And since the last 20 years, it's been in decline. What could change it? Well, economically, we've got so much foreign debt as a result of this, there could be a point at which the dollar drops catastrophically, and that would change everything. We would then become an ex-empire. We'd all feel that. Politically, it could change. As you mentioned right at the start, Donald Trump campaign saying he's going to fix the trade deficit. We liked a lot of what he said. We're a bipartisan organization, by the way, so we don't support individual candidates, but we feel very strongly about trade, manufacturing, and economic growth. And Donald Trump said a lot of the right things over that campaign, and he's continued to say the right things. The problem is he has not done enough. Now, yesterday, he made a national security announcement which said some very positive things about China, about how China is a competitive power to ourselves. And if you follow through on that logic, you're going to take action to stop the $347 billion deficit that we ran with China last year. And that action could take many forms. And, you know, we want to see him take that action. And as I said, it's bipartisan. There are plenty of Democrats in the Congress who would support that, too. Although, no mistake, there's a lot of so-called free traders who are against that and who say they favor free trade. And what they're really doing is playing into the hands of countries like China that exploit a free trade system in order to benefit their own exports. So it's a complicated situation. It's got to change at some point, but exactly when, who knows?
Yeah, it's unsustainable at its current rate. I mean, at some point, they're going to lose faith in the dollar. especially if we're producing less and less over time.
It's unsustainable in a number of ways. We're building up foreign debt and we're building up national debt. And at some point, people lose confidence in the ability of the United States to ever pay it off. You know, and there's the old saying, you know, how did you go broke? Two ways, gradually and then suddenly.
Yeah.
And I think you have to bear that in mind. You know, it seems like how could anybody ever doubt the United States and doubt the dollar? Well, people once said that about the British Empire. And today, you know, the British Empire is only in the history books.
And I'm sure
today Britain has trouble borrowing. We could end up in that situation if debt continues. Now, politically and socially, it's also unsustainable because what you see in the middle of the country is increasing amounts of decay and joblessness and towns declining. And politically, they're voting for people who say they're going to stop that. And, you know, it started with Donald Trump and it's going to continue. If Donald Trump doesn't deliver the benefits to all those declining industrial areas, I'm sure other candidates will come behind him and will try to do that. And that will lead to some serious social change. But it is unsustainable for us to continue to lose our most productive industries and ask people to take jobs in lower paid industries and service industries, what we call low quality jobs. And we use that term because they're low quality in two ways. One, they're paying less than historic jobs. And secondly, they're fewer hours. So they're working, you know, 20 or 25 hours a week, where they used to work 40 hours a week. And people don't like that, particularly when they're trying to raise a family. They need to work 40 hours a week.
Certainly so. Well, so what are we to do? Impose tariffs? Is that the key to this? Or where does it...
There's a range of things we could do. First of all, the most widespread impact on our trade is the value of the dollar. The dollar is too high. We can and we should take action to reduce the dollar. We've got a plan called the market access charge, which would actually charge a small fee to foreigners buying dollar assets. That would bring the dollar down. We could intervene in the currency markets the way that President Reagan and Jim Baker did in the 1980s to bring the dollar down. So that's one area of activity. Another area of activity, which does lead to duties and tariffs, is enforce the trade laws and enforce them unilaterally, enforce them out of Washington, not go to the World Trade Organization or some of these other multilateral bodies, which are really talking shops, and just take action which is allowed under United States law. Right now, we have action pending regarding solar panels, regarding steel, and regarding aluminum. What we would like to see at the Coalition for Prosperous America is say those people selling those products into the United States, they're all trade cheaters. There's plenty of evidence to show they're selling below cost or subsidizing from the government or doing something that is not in accordance with the free trade rules. And therefore, we ought to wallop them with some serious tariffs and duties, which would slow down the imports and help the domestic industry get back on its feet and grow again and employ more people. So those are options that are available. Third thing is free trade agreements like NAFTA and the Korean agreement. President Trump has reopened negotiations on both of those things, and those are good things that the renegotiation is happening. We need to bring it to a conclusion, and we need to have a conclusion which says that the U.S. is going to use these agreements to help rebuild American domestic industry. And by the way, if we rebuild our own industry, ultimately we buy more from these foreign countries. So in the long run, they will benefit too. This isn't the case of America first and forget about the rest of the world. This is put America first, rebuild our economy, and become a bigger and stronger global player and a bigger and stronger consumer around the world. But don't do it with a huge trade deficit. Do it instead with balanced trade.
It makes a lot of sense. So what do you think the odds are of the U.S. pulling out of NAFTA?
I think I'd put those odds at 50-50. I mean, you can hear I'm impatient to see President Trump do more, but I think he recognizes that there are people all over the country who voted for him and are looking to him to take some firm action on trade. This week, he's taking action on taxes, and that's a good thing that he's taking decisive action, even if you don't like every single detail of that 500-page tax bill. On trade, like I say, a lot of cases have been opened. He needs to take some swift, firm action. And as you say, NAFTA could be the right place to start. China is the largest single factor in our trade deficit, and something's got to be done about China. And there are plenty of candidates. As I said, steel, aluminum, and solar panels are three of the most immediate issues. Longer term, there are other issues. And things are happening also in terms of high tech, where China's been notorious for intellectual property theft. So I think the odds are better than 50-50 that in the next 3 to 6 months, we're going to see some very serious decisive action against China and very possibly on the NAFTA front as well.
And Wilbur Ross seems to be very aggressive on behalf of American interests, doesn't he?
You know, I think you're right. I think Wilbur Ross is a Wall Street guy who has been investing in steel and other manufacturing industries for the better part of half a century. And he understands the problems and the challenges those industries face. And he wants to see the government step up and help those industries compete on a level playing field. So he's a good guy in my book. Now in the White House, there are some guys who are not so good, such good guys who are globalists. And they're either supporting Wall Street or they're so concerned with foreign policy, they're so concerned with, let's say, North Korea, that they're giving China a pass. And no mistake, North Korea is a serious issue for the United States government. And on the defense side, that's a very serious challenge. But you can't say forget about the economy in order to deal with a little local defense problem. The economy is very important to the majority of 300 million Americans. And the president's got to remember that. And he is remembering that. And I think he will take action.
Yeah, it's obvious he's working on it. I guess he's had enough problem just staying in the office during the first year to aggressively confront every issue ahead of him. But I think he's gotten a lot more done than anybody could have reasonably expected in the first year. When you look at the fact that regulations, over 1,500 of them, have been basically neutralized or dissolved. Other things, government employment, the EPA, which was a real job killer for industry, that their employment's down by close to 800 people in that department alone. And progress is being made here, isn't it?
Yes, I think you're right. And we see that in the GDP figures. We've had better than 3% growth in the third quarter, and all the indications are that's what we'll see in the fourth quarter too. So we're seeing strong economic growth, as you say, driven by things like deregulation, where President Trump's been able to achieve things through executive order. What's clouded things on the trade front is, frankly, the White House is divided. There's different advisors with different points of view, and there's been a sort of internal battle raging there. And we think there are more and more signs that he's going to come down on the side of taking some decisive trade action, but we'd like to see that sooner rather than later.
Of course. Hey, well, interestingly enough, though, Jeff, upon his election, what would you think if somebody said, hey, by the end of this first year, we'll have 4% economic growth?
Yeah, I think you're right. That it's very impressive. And we've had a powerful stock market. We've had this tax reform is going to funnel a lot more corporate profits into corporations next year, and they're going to distribute those profits. So I think that is going to boost economic growth next year. And I would not be surprised to see better than 4% growth next year. I mean, I've got to say that I wish there were more actions in the tax reform to help domestic companies as opposed to foreign companies, because there are plenty of things you could do on the tax front that would help domestic companies and would make it a little bit harder for importers to sell into this country. And not enough of that was done. And again, Congress is divided, and the Republicans went with the solution that they knew they could push through Congress rather than something that would be more fundamental, addressing the issues on international trade that we'd really like to see addressed. But in time, we'll get back to that, because I understand that people are already saying that there are open questions that emerge from this tax reform. You can't do such a big tax reform and just have it all go to bed and not touch it again. That issues will continue to get thrown up. You know, I'm thinking more of the corporate side, where, you know, the corporate tax is so complicated, and it's so complicated to see how corporations respond, that there will be more need for more reform going down the road.
Yeah, and if economic growth really does pick up, GDP picks up, then tax revenues will increase, and it'll be ripe to go back for another bite of the apple, especially if and when the repeal of Obamacare takes place. I'm still optimistic about it, even though the Senate loss in Alabama. I still believe they're going to have to get rid of Obamacare one way or the other. At least they've repealed the individual mandate that you have to buy this thing. So that's a step in the right direction, right?
Yes, I agree. And I think you're right that economic growth fixes a lot of problems. It increases tax revenue. It creates jobs. It helps a lot of people in a lot of different ways. I still think that, my issue is that, when you say, what happens next, I think that one of the things that happens in corporate taxes is that this tax reform is not going to stop corporations from moving profits overseas, which that's called base erosion. It might do a little bit to stop that, but frankly, particularly in sectors like technology and pharmaceutical, we've seen so much tax revenue lost because profits are shifted to overseas tax havens using artificial methods, which are all, let me emphasize, very, very legal. I've got friends who work in finance departments and they're smart guys and that's what they're paid to do. But that problem will continue. So at 21%, you get less base erosion than before, but you still get it. And ultimately, that hurts the government's tax revenue. So it could be that in 5 years, they're saying in Congress again, and what do we do now about corporate tax? The revenue isn't growing the way profits are growing. So do we want to increase the rate? No, we don't want them to increase the rate. We want them to take action to stop base erosion. So if a technology company based in Silicon Valley is developing its software here, all that profit should flow back to here in California, meaning into the U.S. and into the Internal Revenue Service and to the taxpayers' benefit, rather than be artificially shifted to Luxembourg or the Cayman Islands, where it escapes the Internal Revenue Service, and it also waters down some of its impact on the local economy, on the U.S. economy, I mean.
Absolutely. Well, hey, we can hope for the best here, and we'll just have to see what happens. Jeff, where's the best place to find you and read your work?
Yeah, thank you very much. So the Coalition for Prosperous America, we are a bipartisan group, including manufacturers, labor unions, farmers, and ranchers. We speak for 4 million Americans. Our website is prosperousamerica.org, and we are fighting daily to improve the trade balance, rebuild manufacturing industry, and restore economic growth. So check out our website and write to us if you've got any comments or thoughts, and join the organization. Anybody can join the coalition. Thank you very much, Kerry.
Hey, my pleasure. And hey, be part of the program. Write us an email, kl@kerrylutz.com. The Twitter feed's @KerryLutz and the Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Jeff, thanks so much for coming on again, and let's see what happens next.
Sure. I'm optimistic. Next year is going to be a good year economically. So have a happy holiday, Kerry, and we'll speak soon.
You too. Thanks so much.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.